1, 2, 3.
You're listening to Sports Talk Chicago with your host, John Zagluhl.
John, I am fantastic. Thank you for having me. You got an awesome voice, man, and that was a terrific intro. You're like a pro's pro.
You know, that was the first time somebody ever said that, John. No, you're the first person to ever say anything like that. That's very interesting.
You got it, John. Anything for a fellow Chicago guy.
Well, what a great question.
That's a great question. Nobody's actually asked me that.
I like it. What a great question. I never heard that before.
Chase Utley is what? You're saying he's not a Hall of Fame candidate?
You know, it's funny. You may be the only person that I've heard make that connection.
Thank you, John, for having me. I'm doing great. By the way, you have an outstanding voice. Not sure about your face because I haven't met you, but your voice is great.
You're doing a much better job than I ever did. You've had some heavy hitters guests on too, man, so keep up the good work. But it's good to be with you, and I'm ready to talk sports.
Hello, everybody, and welcome into Sports Talk Chicago. My name's John Zagluhl. Great to have you here. Today's edition of the program, the Bears lost on Sunday, but Justin Fields developed. We'll talk about that in just a moment. Plus, a brand new exclusive interview with Curt Schilling, the 6-time All-Star and 3-time World Series champion. Talk with him about his political career, his baseball career, and so much more, including his Hall of Fame case, too. It's a really good interview, and it comes your way near the midway point of this show. Remember, you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at John Z Sports and on Facebook at John Zagluhl. And if you want to watch more of this show, search up Sports Talk Chicago on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, and SportsTalkChicago.com. I want to start today with this. You ever feel conflicted? Ever feel good, but also a bit guilty about something you've done? For me, it's eating. It's food. Sometimes I really try to control myself. Don't eat that last donut. Don't eat that last cookie, but I always give in. It's really hard. I got a sweet tooth. I feel guilty afterwards, but during, I feel great. I'm really happy I decided to have one more donut, one more cookie. Like the Bears game yesterday. I'm conflicted. I don't really know how to feel. Look, on one hand, they lost, and we'll talk about why they did. But on the other hand, Justin Fields played well. Very good, actually. Exceeded my expectations, and despite the interception late, almost had a perfect game, in a sense. Really tough to gauge how it went. Really tough to sit here and say it was a failure, horrible. Epic rant. I mean, there's no need for that today. It wasn't horrible. Wasn't great, but it also wasn't the end of the world, that loss. Now, if we're talking playoff chances, big blow. You know, if the Bears had won that game, they'd actually have the last playoff spot again at 4-4. Now, instead, they dropped to 3-5. They're far down in that list. Man, chances are this is going to be the game that haunts them when it comes to their playoff chances. Now, again, this is not a playoff season. This is not about getting in and making a run in the postseason. But for those of you following that still and still caring about it, chances are the Bears aren't getting in after this loss. So we can already look towards next year now. Don't have to worry about playoffs. Don't have to worry about getting in. Don't have to worry about Matt Nagy and everybody sticking around if they make it. Chances are at this point, they ain't getting in. And that's fine. We'll move on from that. I want to talk about the game first off. I was very shocked to see the defense be the issue. I don't know how to explain it either. How do you give up 33 points to Jimmy Garoppolo? My game preview, I talked about Garoppolo. Hasn't had the best year. And didn't have the best game yesterday either. I mean, no touchdowns. But 322 passing yards. How do you give up 322 passing yards to Jimmy Garoppolo? That's my question. How do you give up 467 total yards to the 49ers offense? That makes no sense to me. This team isn't good offensively at all. Jimmy Garoppolo is your quarterback. You have many different running backs, all of which got hurt. So you're on Elijah Mitchell. I mean, these guys have nothing offensively. And yet, 467 yards in total. Garoppolo passed for 322. Maybe no touchdowns, but two rushing touchdowns. Two rushing touchdowns for a quarterback who can't even move 5 yards out of the pocket. It's comical. 33 points to this offensive unit? Comical. That's a joke. And there's really no one specifically to blame. It's just the defense as a whole was horrible. And I can't sit here and tell you, hey, it was this guy's fault, it was that guy's fault. It was just a joke, the whole game. Yeah, Sean Desai's shine is starting to wear off. Yeah, it is. And I don't get it. Now, you have these good players defensively. Akeem Hicks played. I know Khalil Mack was out, but really? I'm not trying to take away something from Khalil Mack, but you have other playmakers defensively to make sure a team like San Francisco doesn't score 33 points. You can't justify to me, oh, Khalil Mack's out, so we have to give up 33. No, that's a scam. The defense was awful. Horrible run defense. San Fran ran the ball all day long down the Bears' throats. And a couple of deep balls from Jimmy Garoppolo really sealed the deal. Funny part is, the Bears had more rushing yards again and lost. And they left a lot of points on the field. You know, the Bears only punted once all game. And yet they only scored 22 points. Mitchell averaged nearly 8 yards per carry. 8 yards. I don't care who you are. You're giving up 8 yards per carry. Chances are you are not going to win. He only had one touchdown. Who cares? 8 yards per carry. That's better than Garoppolo, honestly. Better for moving the ball downfield. And that's what happened. San Fran found great ways to push downfield. A couple of deep balls. Deebo Samuel at 171 receiving yards. And there's the story of the game. Eddie Jackson got hurt, and yeah, the Bears missed him too. But between the deep passes from Garoppolo, two of them, really, and the run game from Mitchell, the Bears had nothing. They had no answer all game. I mean, we're talking fourth quarter, nothing changed. That's why they lost. I can't believe I'm sitting here saying this, but it's true, the defense let the Bears down yesterday, not the offense. Offense did great. Khalil Herbert, 72 yards. Justin Fields, 103 rushing yards. Give me that all day. You know me, I love mobile quarterbacks. You know, we finally saw what Justin Fields really could be yesterday. No more excessive turnovers. No 5 turnovers in a game. That's who Justin Fields could be. He's developed correctly. I don't think it's a coincidence either that Matt Nagy wasn't there. I really don't. Nagy wasn't there. I mean, Lazor supposedly called all the plays. And what do you know? Justin Fields, 19 of 27. Best completion percentage in a single game all year. 175 yards and a touchdown. One pick. 103 rushing yards, though, too. I'm not going to worry as much about the passing yards because if you run for 103, you're good. Like Lamar Jackson. Lamar Jackson has never thrown for 4,000 yards in a season. Guess what? 2 straight years of 1,000 rushing yards and 3,000-plus passing yards. I'll take that all day. You're racking up yards for your team and you're winning? I don't care how many yards you throw for. Are you accurate? Do you make good decisions? That's what matters for a quarterback. Can you make a pass, no matter what the situation? Can you hit your receiver right in the chest? And do you make good decisions? Are you throwing the ball all the time to the defender, or are you careful with the football? That's how you have to judge a quarterback. And in Justin Fields' case, he did great. The interception, I don't even blame him for that. You know what? The Bears had no choice. End of the game, down by 2 possessions, you have to make a play deep downfield. Had that play been made somehow miraculously, they would have had to score. Onside kick, score again. He was doing everything he could to win the game. And I have no issue with that. And on top of it, that pass hit up Darnell Mooney's hands anyway. It was actually on target. He actually got it there. Can't blame him. Not for that. I won't blame him for that. His rushing touchdown. No quarterback in the NFL. Maybe Lamar Jackson, maybe. That's it. There's no one else who could do what he did. Reverse directions like that. I mean, he looked like a running back. Even running backs can't do what he did for that touchdown. That's who Justin Fields is. That's who I expected, right? That's who I was told the Bears would happen. We saw it. I saw an accurate passer, saw a good runner, and I saw a guy who actually made pretty good decisions for the most part. Great game. Probably his best game of his career today. I'd say so. That was his best game in his NFL career. Yes, it was a loss. Yes, maybe the passer rating isn't the best. So the pick, all that stuff, but that was the best game. Now we are seeing progress. And again, ironically enough, Matt Nagy wasn't there. See, a lot of people said, oh, if the Bears win, Matt Nagy isn't there, that proves he should be fired. Not necessarily. The loss doesn't mean, oh, the Bears need Matt Nagy. Justin Fields' development is what you should be tracking. Don't track the win or loss. The Bears lost without Nagy, fine. But Justin Fields, ironically enough, had the best game of his career. How do you explain it? How's that possible? Well, who was calling plays and who wasn't there? That's how you have to wonder if Matt Nagy's really meant for this team. Even in the next coming weeks, when Nagy comes back, how will Justin Fields do? This is the game you have to compare it to. Moving forward, every game from Justin Fields, compare it to this one. Does he progress? Does he get better? Who's calling plays? Who's around him? That's how you'll know if Matt Nagy's really meant to be here. I contend he isn't. That was Fields' best game. Nagy wasn't there. So, that's the way you have to gauge this. Wins and losses matter, but not really. And we know that. We knew that from day one this year. How do we compare Justin Fields' performance with or without Matt Nagy? That's the key. You have to compare San Fran to Pittsburgh. Nagy will be back, so how will Fields do? Remains to be seen. Every game moving forward, no matter who they play, it has to be compared to this game. That's how we'll know. It'll be so easy to tell if it's Matt Nagy or the team or whatever it might be. We'll know by the end of the year who's most responsible for Justin Fields' development. We'll know if it's Justin Fields' fault, if it's Matt Nagy's fault, if it's the defense, O-line, whatever it might be. We'll know by this game. That's why it was so important for this game to be played without Matt Nagy. Seriously. Now we know we have a gauge, we have a benchmark, how it's supposed to look. How Fields is supposed to look. Don't think, oh, the Bears lost, so they need Matt Nagy. No, that was not the point of yesterday. Win or loss, it didn't matter. What mattered is Justin Fields played pretty damn well without Matt Nagy. How will that go? How will that progress over time? Is Justin Fields going to continue to get better when Nagy comes back, or will he get worse again? If he gets worse again, and Matt Nagy's back, we know who the culprit is. If he continues to get better and better, well, maybe Matt Nagy is the right guy for Justin Fields. I'll tell you this much. I haven't seen it so far. I saw a comfortable quarterback yesterday. I saw somebody who could actually make plays, and I saw someone who wasn't worried about their head coach. Someone who realized, you know what? He's not going to get in the way today. Let me play my game. That was Justin Fields' game. Tons of rollouts, right? On the move. Encouraged to run the football, not be a pocket passer. That's the Justin Fields show. I saw a different quarterback. Saw a guy having more fun, frankly. He had more fun. He was loose. He was comfortable. He looked like he was in charge of the offense. Funny how that changes when Nagy's around. So all I'm saying is judge the game based off of Fields' performance, not off the end result. Yeah, it's a shame, because had the Bears won, they could have been in the playoff race still, but that doesn't matter here. Horrible effort by the defense, that's why they lost, end of story. What we have to realize is, Justin Fields played better without Matt Nagy. When Nagy comes back, how do we gauge this? Will he be better or worse? Fields. That's the key. If Justin Fields regresses, we're talking about 5 turnovers again. We're talking about, hey, it's a free play, and it isn't. We're talking about 10 or 11 passing attempts and a loss. Well, then we know who the culprit is. We know what the problem is. If, though, Fields is a game like this, 200 passing yards, 100 rushing yards, 2 touchdowns, maybe a pick here or there. Close game. Maybe it's Fields finding his stride and working well with Matt Nagy. In retrospect, you might not think this game was important. It was. Very important. I mean, this game could determine if Matt Nagy gets fired or not. Seriously. We have something to compare to. We do. Now we do. We have something to look at and say, well, Matt Nagy wasn't here. How'd he do? Versus when Nagy was around. Matt Nagy knows this too. Everybody does. This game could determine if he's canned at the end of the year. And he wasn't even coaching. How funny is that? Wasn't even coaching, and this may determine if he sticks around. But it's true. Because we saw a different Justin Fields. A better Justin Fields. And as advertised, Justin Fields. Now the question is, will we see the same guy with Matt Nagy back? I have my doubts. And at the end of the season, when the Bears are determining who should come back, who should stay, how Justin Fields progress, I really hope they circle this game. It was a good one. It was well played. It was comfortable. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed watching Fields and this offense for that matter. Wasn't bad. Just remember that. Disregard the end results. I know it was tough, ugly, really tough to watch. I mean, should have scored more touchdowns and the defense played horribly. But Justin Fields progressed. That's the whole goal, right? That's what we said before the season. That's all that matters. Justin Fields progressed. And he did it without Matt Nagy. I don't think that's a coincidence. More to come here on Sports Talk Chicago. My interview with Kurt Schilling comes up next, so stay tuned. Talk Chicago. Here with John Zaglula, and we are back and ready for today's special guest. He's a 6-time All-Star, 3-time World Series champion, and a member of the 3,000 Strikeout Club. Please welcome Kurt Schilling to the program. Kurt, it's great to have you on. How are you?
Appreciate it, John. Thank you.
So, Kurt, how's Tennessee been since you've moved?
Heaven. It's been amazing.
Why has it been so nice? What's made it different from Boston?
The people down here they were raised the way I was raised. They're respectful, they're kind, they're generous, they're thoughtful, they're caring, everything you want. I mean, we had some amazing friends up in Massachusetts, but it's just a very different place.
Do you miss Boston at all now?
No.
Why do you say that?
No, I just don't. We love living here. I mean, I'm very much forward looking. I had a phenomenal experience in Boston. It was everything I hoped it would be, and we're on to a different part of our lives.
You raise chickens, right? You have a farm down there in Tennessee?
How's I have a rescue, going? Actually. I have llamas and alpacas and goats and chickens and peacocks and you name it. And I got it. It's kind of doubling as an animal rescue as well.
That's really great. Why did you decide to do that?
I love animals. They're simple. The fact is I've got a barn full of unconditional love down there, and it's just incredibly relaxing. I have four puppies now, livestock dogs that I'm raising down there. I'm living the dream right now. I really am.
So what's a day in the life of Kurt Schilling like now? Cause I know we tried to schedule an interview and you're all over the farm. So what's a day like now for you?
Well, even though my calendar has literally nothing on it because I'm retired, I just keep myself busy doing stuff I enjoy doing. We empty nested about 3 months ago. Our youngest is in Maine playing hockey, trying to get his way to the NHL. And, our other kids are in school or working and doing those things. So we're just enjoying life. So a day is, from a scheduling standpoint, Monday and Saturday are kind of the same days for me, which is awesome. But nothing major. I mean, we're going back to see the kids and this weekend and see a hockey game and that kind of stuff, but we're just kind of living it day to day.
Kurt Schilling here on Sports Talk Chicago. Kurt, what's prompted your outspokenness after your playing career?
Well, I don't think it's any different than it was when I played. They just ask me different questions now, and they don't like the answers. So I've always been very open about who I am and what I am, and very comfortable with who I am and what I am. If people don't like the answers, just don't ask the questions.
How do you feel about the direction of the country right now?
Horrible. Let me check that. We're on the the day after the Virginia election. So I'm uplifted somewhat. You have two very strong black women who are conservatives who have won posts, and the left has continued to push the racist card, which I find amusing. This last year has been, in my mind, just an unmitigated disaster, and it's everything I think we expected from this administration.
What do you think could change the tides a bit and maybe reverse course from what happened in 2020?
A free and fair election. Probably another Donald Trump run, as much as people hate to hear that. Not everybody, but some. I don't know. I feel like we've gotten pushed and shoved enough. And, I don't know about you, but the things that I hear, and Let's Go Brandon is just the latest one. And we chuckle about it, and I do too, but I'm offended that people think we're that stupid. I'm offended that people think we're that naive and that ignorant. I know what I heard. You know what you heard. We all heard what we thought we heard. And the media continues to play us for the village idiot, and their time has run out. You're probably going to draw more viewers to this than any CNN program this month, which should speak volumes about where. But it's true. I mean, this is where you have to go now to get real information. Where you have, there's an agenda and it's being played out in front of us. And most of us have called it months ago and are no longer a part of it.
I'm just curious, have you ever thought about running for office before? Have you been prompted to, especially after the Biden election?
I actually was going to a couple different times. I was going to run against Elizabeth Warren in Mass. I thought about running in Arizona for a congressional seat this last year. But at the end of the day, when I watched what they did to the Trump family, and I watched what the media did when it kind of made kids fair game, my family, I don't want to say suffered. My family paid the price of a 20-year professional career and all that that entailed. And I just didn't feel like they needed to be put through anymore. That's And I also think, given my desire to clean house, I don't know that I'd last very long in office, because I would have probably less of a filter than Trump, and that might not be good in this day and age.
Are you ruling it out, or could you see yourself at some point in the future still running?
Yeah. I mean, it all depends. It would have to be the right place and the right circumstance. It's something I'm passionate about. The other thing I'm passionate about is working with young kids. I love working with young baseball players, especially pitchers. But I've been pretty much blackballed out of baseball, I think, in most every capacity. So I don't know that that'll ever be a door that'll open. But, we'll see.
Why do you think you've been blackballed? Is it your belief?
Well, I know I have been. I mean, I've never have reached out at a couple different opportunities to, honestly, I just wanted to go through the interview process and see what it was like. And I've with a couple exceptions, I've never even gotten a response. So, and I know I can teach. But that's, I understand it. That's what the game is these days. And unfortunately, Rob Manfred hasn't turned out to be the guy I thought he was. I was a player rep for about 10 years, and I dealt with Rob during the 94 lockout. I've always loved the guy. But to see him turn this far left has been disappointing.
What kind of opportunities are you talking about? Like coaching jobs or where?
Yeah, pitching coach. I've actually done quite a bit of work in the draft for a couple teams, looking at kids for the draft for a couple teams. That's what I think I'm good. I can look at a young pitcher and tell, and know, but you know, I've been pitching in my mind. I've been doing it for 50 some years. So I know that probably as well as anybody alive, and I love teaching, but coaching, getting involved I feel like there's a lot of room for teams to organize and set up a program for pitching from rookie ball to the big leagues. And I think there's a right way and a wrong way to do it. And I don't think a lot of teams are doing it the right way.
What is the right way?
Well, I think one of the right ways is to emphasize, especially to your starting pitchers at a young age, that the most important statistic is innings. And because, I was always taught that innings were the most important statistic, because if you're in there for the innings, then all the other numbers are going to take care of themselves. People lament, and I'm one of them. I couldn't watch the postseason. I'm not real interested in watching a guy who's busting his ass to get to the fifth inning as a starting pitcher. And in many cases, it's not the player's fault. There's so much money involved in signing these young players that they do everything they can do to protect them, to make sure that they eventually get to the big leagues. The problem is these kids come to the big leagues and a lot of things that have never happened to them before happen to them for the first time at that level. And that's just too much stress and strain physically and mentally to ask, I think, for young pitchers. You don't want to experience, much like raising kids, you don't want your kids to experience a mayhem for the first time after they leave the house. You want to teach them about those things before they do. And I think it's very much the same thing with pitching.
How's the game differ from when you play? Is it a completely different game to you?
It really is. I mean, you saw this postseason was a perfect example. Nobody was worried about facing any pitcher. Nobody was worried about I'll use my example. There was no RJ and Schilling to that you had to win this game to make sure, nothing like that. And, you see guys coming out or not posting in the postseason for various physical things that just are mind boggling to me. This is, you may never get there again. And it's a once in a lifetime opportunity every time you're afforded it. And, sabermetrics, I don't believe translates very well into October. And, I was a sabermetrics guy 30 years ago in the standpoint of statistics and what were priorities to me and what mattered. But I don't know. I don't think that they translate as well to October as the Yale grads would like to think they do.
Kurt Schilling here on Sports Talk Chicago. Kurt, what do you make of your Hall of Fame case?
I don't. I really don't. I haven't for years. I asked to be taken off the ballot this year because it's turned into a nightmare for us. No one in my family, including myself, ever looks forward to it coming around again, because the media continues to paint a picture of a Curt Schilling that doesn't actually exist. And the things that are said and written don't have any basis in reality. You know, I played 22 years. I played with thousands of people. I interacted with hundreds of thousands of people. I've never had a teammate, a friend, a clubhouse guy, a coach, anybody in any organization ever accuse me of saying something racist, something sexist, something homophobic, ever. But the media has painted a picture of a Curt Schilling that doesn't exist. And so every year that comes back around. And it's turned into this nightmarish process that I want no part of. And quite honestly, the members of the sports media that do the judging, there are very few Jason Starks and Tim Kirkens in the world. You know, those guys are pure souls, good people. They love the game. They're fans, right? Good or bad about me, I don't care. Just don't lie. And this group of people doing the judging are some of the worst human beings in existence. I mean, if you think about it, Bill Conlon, who is in the writer's wing of the Hall of Fame, was a pedophile. And I've never heard the writers lament about his inclusion. I've never hit my wife, driven drunk, done drugs, hit my kids. I've never done any of the things like that. Doesn't mean I haven't sinned. I certainly have. But none of the things that people are up in arms about professional athletes doing, have I done. I was outspoken. They loved it when I played because I can fill a notebook. And I was never, and I have never been a yes, no guy. You're going to ask me a question, I'm going to give you an answer. If I don't care about something, I'll just say yes or no, but I'm passionate about the things I believe in. When you ask me a question, you get an answer.
Why do you think they targeted you in this way since you retired and since you've been on the ballot too?
Well, because I'm a conservative. They've made it clear. I mean, the things that they've said about me, again, have no basis. In fact, if you go back to the first big blow up, which was I posted a tweet comparing Islamic extremists to Nazis. Now, I don't know which group I offended. I don't care. I mean, one of them's a group of terrorists. The other one's Nazis. I mean, but somehow the media selectively omits and words from quotes, and that somehow they're soothsayers because they know what you meant to say. You didn't actually say it, but they know what he actually meant was. And they're probably the worst at human beings in the world at those things. And, you know, there's no... This is the last true sports forum, the radio, because this is unfiltered, it's uncut, and it's one of the reasons I don't preferably do television much anymore, because everybody gets to know you in sound bites and clips that the person showing them gets to pick. And when it comes to me, they don't enjoy it.
Yeah, this is on TV and the radio, so I appreciate you pointing that out. That's correct. Yeah. How do you feel about this whole situation? Because you do have the accolades. You have the numbers. You have 3,000 strikeouts, 3 World Series. So you have the numbers to be there. Should your personal beliefs get in the way of this achievement? This is a lifelong achievement.
Well, again, it doesn't matter what I think because I don't vote. You know, I have always been a believer that the Hall of Fame should be one and done from the standpoint of, you know, I play this game with everybody. I'm going to name a couple of baseball players and you tell me yes or no. Are they Hall of Famers? Mickey Mantle.
Hall of Famer.
Cy Young.
Hall of Famer. Definitely.
Greg Maddux.
Hall of Famer.
Mike Mussina. That.
Yes
that's
and
it.
No.
If you have to pause, that's the Hall of Fame. In my mind, the Hall of Fame is, right? So if you have to pause, then no. So I was never a Hall of Famer in my own book because you could make a case. And so, you know, and I'm okay with that. If I don't get elected, I'm going to have my 3 rings. I'm going to keep my 3 trophies. I'm going to have the respect of the guys that I played with and the guys that I played against. You know, I can't live. And that's why when you ask me about it, I'm indifferent about it in that sense. I mean, to me, the Hall of Fame is about recognition of all the people that you had to stand on to get there. I mean, you know, it's God-given ability first and foremost. But the fact of the matter is, without hundreds of thousands of people in my life, and enormously influential people, including, like, you know, starting with my father, I never would have even, this conversation never would have happened. So You know, for me, that was what that was. That is what the Hall of Fame is recognizing the people that deserve and committed and put the time in. You know, it's a, I'm a hockey parent now, so I understand, you know, 4 a.m. skates and all those things that parents sacrifice. And my parents did the same. I grew up very poor middle class. My dad was Army, but I played baseball and they made sure I did.
Who were some of those people? You mentioned your dad. Is there anyone else in your mind who really?
Oh yeah, I had a ton. I had my dad passed away when I was 21, which is about 8 months before I made the big leagues, and I was in search for the next couple of years. I was really desperate for a father figure. Frank Robinson, Johnny Padres, John Vukovich, Ryan Butterfield, Buck Showalter, Terry Francona. John Farrell, I apologize. I know I'm leaving names out. So those guys were enormously influential. Frank was a huge influence on me, and a friend my whole life. Jim Fregosi is another one. I mean, just guys that Jerry Colangelo. You know, I was always on the lookout for Stern. Dallas Green, John Vukovich was my third base coach in Philadelphia. My first really big influence in the big leagues. And John came from the school of he who is loudest is always right. And that was how Dallas Green coached. I loved playing for guys like that because I knew I was going to do all the things I needed to do. And I knew they were going to make sure that everybody else did as well. And so I always loved playing for guys that were disciplinarians and strict and things like I goofed off. I said stuff and yada, yada, but I posted every fifth day and took the ball and I left everything I had on the field. And I played the game hard. I played the game right. I played the game with respect. I mean, I was never drilled in my career. And I know I hit 52 guys, I think, and probably less than 10 of them were accidental. But it's because I played the game right. I learned that from those men and from my father. And you know, Roger Clemens told me very early in my career, when you walk to the mound, that name on the back of your shirt is not yours, it's your father's. And that was always very profound for me. And it's actually a conversation I had with my youngest son who's playing hockey and recently about playing the game hard and playing the game right. If you're good and you do those things, good things happen.
Let me ask you this, because you mentioned this before publicly. If the Veterans Committee somehow puts you in, would you accept that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's what I'm hoping will happen. I'm very much hoping that if I get elected, that it's that process that does it.
Will you do a speech and do the whole spiel, go to Cooperstown and everything?
Sure. Absolutely. Don't think for a second I'm indifferent about the Hall of Fame itself. I mean, because I was born and raised on baseball. You know, when I was playing for Frank Robinson, I knew who Frank Robinson was, right? I mean, I was sitting across from arguably, in my opinion, one of the most underrated players in the history of the game. Yes, he's a Hall of Famer, but I don't think people appreciate he might have been one of the five best players that ever lived. So that in itself, that's profound. Those plaques are meaningful. But they're not all meaning. If it never happens, it doesn't change anything I did. It doesn't change anything I won or lost. It doesn't change my teammates, I don't think, their opinion of me. So, you know, I'm good, man.
What's your greatest or most fondest achievement from your career?
The Roberto Clemente Award.
Tell me more about it.
There's a backstory. In 1972, I attended the first and only game I've ever attended in my life as a paid admission, which was the final game of the 1972 season, and Roberto Clemente got his 3,000th hit off John Matlack.
Wow.
I grew up a Pirates fan. So my dad's favorite player was Roberto Clemente, and he died 2 weeks later in the plane crash. And that was the first time I ever saw my dad cry. But my dad idolized Roberto, so I did. And then when I got to the big leagues in 1992, I was talking to my wife, and we were talking about I just had my first successful season in the big leagues. And I said, you know, we're talking about, you know, achievements and accomplishments. And I said, when I retire, I want two things. I want the guys that I played with to look back and say life or death, one game, I want him to have the ball. And I want to win the Roberto Clemente Award. Because to me, that defines everything you are outside of the uniform. And you know, getting that was the highest honor of my life. I got to meet the Clemente family and, you know, that whole thing. And being on that list is something I'll always be very proud of.
When you received the award, when you found out that you got it, what was your reaction?
I was blown away. I had won. So the process is like this. Every team has Roberto Clemente Award winner each year. And then those winners go into the group and one is picked for Major League Baseball. And I had won it a couple of years for the teams I played for, which was incredibly, you know, honoring. And I was incredibly proud of it. But to win the whole thing was, and listen, I'm not naive. I had a stinking monster season too. And I know that usually helps. You don't generally see a guy hitting 203 with two home runs and seven RBIs winning it. But in 2001 and two, RJ and I had, had the time of our lives, and it just happened to coincide with that.
Tell me about that 2001 season. That was probably one of the most historical 1-2 punches in baseball history.
Well, I argue that for 2 years, nobody in the history of the game was ever as dominant as we were. I mean, you think about it, we won 90 games.
Unbelievable.
I think we struck out 13 or 1,400 hitters.
Wow.
You know, we were the first two teammates to ever do 300 in a season together. I screwed up by being seven short in 01, or we would have done it twice. But I can't begin to describe it. Let's put it this way. If I could go back to any period of my career, I'd do those 2 years again. Because, my God, we knew. I mean, it was – and you'd have to ask Randy, but every time he pitched, I tried to be better than he was. And that was a bar that, you know, I'm watching every fifth day. I'm watching a guy who's going to do something maybe tonight no one's ever seen before every time he took the ball. And I took that as a full-on challenge. I loved it. And I think we made 135, 140 starts, and we were only beaten back-to-back once.
Wow.
And we, like I said, we knew. And teams knew. Teams knew when, you know, I always used to, when I was young, you know, you'd look at the schedule and see who's pitching Friday and Saturday, and, oh, man, it's Maddux or Clemens. And it, I think for a period of time, he and I became that those guys, like, oh, crap, we got Johnson and Schilling this weekend. And, you know, you weren't going to make your living off of us, that's for sure.
How special was that World Series?
So people in Boston get very offended when they ask me which one was better. But see, 01 had a very personal connection to me. I was raised in Arizona. So wow. That, you know, in Phoenix. And so, you know, and I was part of the first team to ever win a world championship in any sport in Arizona. 9/11 happened. Game seven, you can't draw it up. Game seven, I'm facing the most influential player in my career in Roger Clemens. We're both 20 game winners. It's been one of the most remarkable six games of World Series play ever. And then you had 9/11 as the backdrop for all of that. And so it was amazing. It was breathtaking. And, you know, I was such an integral part of it. And so that made it obviously a bigger deal for me. And I was doing it in front of guys I went to high school with, my junior college teammates and stuff like that. So, you know, what it meant for the country. Baseball, I think, really breathed life back into this country for 9/11 and did what it was supposed to do. But 2004 was every bit as special for so many different reasons. But 01, man, I mean, when you go back and look at that, we should have won that series 4-0. I mean, we literally absolutely dominated these guys. And they were still three outs away from winning their fourth in a row. That's the amazing thing to me. That was a dynasty of dynasties. And we just, you know, and it's funny because you think in sports, things are supposed to happen a certain way. Like in 1993, we were this lovable bunch of gypsies, tramps, and thieves in Philadelphia, and the city just worshiped us. We should have beat the Blue Jays if everything was supposed to go right. Joe Carter said otherwise. But in 01, you would think, well, the Yankees and New York, 9/11, they should win this. And like, and I'm on the other side going, no, they shouldn't. No, I'm happy they're here, but screw that. I mean, but you have to, you know, I think we willed it. It was just an incredible, and, you know, you have a guy rightfully elected the Hall of Fame with 100% in Mariano Rivera, and probably two of the blemishes in his entire career, two of the top three, I got to be there for. You know, the 04 playoffs when we came back and beat him, and 01, you know, game seven, ninth inning. I mean, it just, and so I got to see the two mistakes he made in his entire life firsthand and benefit from them. So, you know, and it was the Yankees, so that made it just that much better.
More to come with Kurt Schilling in just a moment. Stay tuned. Vince Yang, Sports Talk Chicago. Here on Sports Talk Chicago. Kurt, how much did it mean to you to end your career with a World Series 2 in 2007?
Well, a couple things. First off, I didn't think my career was ending then. I had planned to probably play another year, so I certainly didn't expect, as I'm walking off the mound, you know, embarrassingly in the sixth inning of a game. I never thought that'd be my last game, but to know that my last start was a World Series win, you know, that doesn't suck, although it does suck that I walked Todd Helton in my career. So, but no, I had planned on coming back and I got hurt that winter and it turned into kind of an ugly thing. But I'll forever be grateful to the people of Boston. They were so good to me and so good to my family.
How did it feel, I mean, to break that drought in 04, to win again in 07, to end your career like on that note? I mean, that must have been, that's not something everybody gets to do. What you got
well,
to do.
There's an interview I did with a gentleman out of Boston named Dan Roach when I signed in the winter of 03. And it's eerily prophetic because he said, you know, what do you want to do? What do you want to look back on when this is over? And I said, well, you know, I'd like to look back after the 2007 season and, you know, our second or third World Series since I've been there and say that, you know, we did it. And I saw somebody played that afterwards. But I mean, you know, I spent my career, no one ever pressured me more than I pressured myself. And I pressured might not be the right word, but, you know, I did the Ford commercial and in the Ford commercial, the guy, I'm hitchhiking and the guy says, where are you headed? I said, I'm headed to Boston to break an 86-year-old curse. Now, I'm a Christian. I understand those things curses don't exist. It's a curse of talent when you don't win. And you had guys like Kevin Millar talking about how in 2003, he didn't want a ground ball hit to him late in that game because he didn't want to be Bill Buckner again, which is the exact opposite way of how I approach everything in life. And so, you know, that's why I came up with saying, why not us? And it was a very simple question with a very simple answer. There's no reason it can't be us. And, you know, we fall behind 3-0 and, you know, I'm hobbling around on one foot and I'm thinking, and I was devastated because that's what they brought me there to do. You know, I made a point during the negotiations at my home in the winter. I pointed to Theo and to Larry Lucchino and Jed Hoyer. I pointed to the World Series trophy that was just conveniently sitting between them. And I said, let's not fool around, guys. I know you're bringing me there to win one of those. And you don't think you can do it without me. And that's what I want to come there for. And so I'm not going to hide. That was fun to me. That's a challenge and in a good way. I'm very different than my father was a man of very few words. And obviously I'm the exact opposite. And I had no problem with that because that's what I got paid to do. I was getting paid to beat them. And so saying it out loud doesn't change the fact that it's still the case. And, you know, I probably could have done better before game one of the playoffs. And I said, I can't think of anything better than making 55,000 people from New York shut up. And then I went out and got my ass handed to me and they didn't shut up. They were loud, rightfully so. But I got to come back 5 days later and do it again. And it worked out.
Tell me about the bloody sock and how you made it through all that pain.
Faith. I am a Christian, and I am became born again in 1997. No, it wasn't some prophetic event in my life. I just had kids, and I was trying to figure out what this was all about. You know, the meaning of life, and why are we here? And I knew there was something bigger out there, and I became a Christian, and it was something that I relied on and lived on. And a lot of people are, you know, I used to say a pregame prayer on the mound at time before I pitched. And, you know, people were like, oh, yeah, God wants you to win more than the Yankees. And I was like, no, no, I don't ever pray for wins. I prayed for the strength to compete. And I had a torn tendon that was surgically repaired before the game. And they stitched the skin to the bone, and it worked. And I just prayed to God for the strength to be out there and compete. And once I knew I could do that, I was totally fine with the chips falling where they fell. And fortunately, it fell on our side of the table.
I wanted to ask you something. So I don't know if you saw this in the World Series. Charlie Morton broke his leg, and there were you know, there were comparisons to your moment. And he said this, and I want you to respond to it. He said, quote, "The difference is I broke my leg, and Kurt scuffed himself up at Yankee Stadium to make it about himself. Kurt is still conning the Red Sox. Good." But what's your response to that?
I didn't hear that. I don't know. I don't really care. I mean, I got my ring, he got his, and, you know, I mean, he came out and I didn't. I don't know. I don't know.
I just was very curious because I saw that a week ago and I thought
I didn't
that was
hear
a pretty,
that. Yeah, I had not heard that.
That was a charged statement to me.
Well, I mean, that's, you know, again, when people are led to believe you're something you're not, other people make opinions and comments that, you know, they don't know their ass from a hole in the ground. So it is what it is.
Two more questions before we finish up. First off, your favorite teammate in baseball was who?
No way. I had too many. I had some of the greatest teammates. I could start a David West, funny, Doug Mirabelli, Bill Miller, Kevin Jordan. I had so many great teammates. Ron Gant, Scott Rolen, Jeff Bagwell. I could literally just start rolling names left and right. Todd Stottlemyre, Brian Anderson. Just phenomenal human beings. And I was always very, very blessed with, for the most part, I had great teammates every year.
And then last question, what's the funniest moment you've been a part of in your career?
It happened off the field and I can't tell the story. It has to do with a club where women take their clothes off and it was, I was young and it's one that I'll take with me to my game. Oh, I will give you one story that I just came out on Twitter today. Today apparently was the anniversary of Game 6 where we beat Andy Pettitte in 2001. And I revealed the secret that Andy tipped all his pitches that night.
Really?
Yes. He was tipping his pitches when he had runners on base, and we had every pitch that he was throwing when he had runners on base.
Wow.
And it was the only time I ever saw him do it. But I caught it like in the first inning and well, we crushed them.
I didn't know that. That's unbelievable.
Yep. Yep.
Kurt, thank you so much for joining me. Really.
Oh, my pleasure, man. Thank you.
And an honor. Thank you.
All right. You take care of yourself.
Great talk there with Kurt Schilling. And that'll do it for us today here on Sports Talk Chicago. Big thank you to Kurt Schilling himself, Matt Dubiel, WCKG, Jim DeTobe, and Tomorrow Entertainment for making this show a success. Remember, you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at John Z Sports and on Facebook at John Zagluo. If you want to watch more of this show, search up Sports Talk Chicago on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, and SportsTalkChicago.com. Another great show comes with tomorrow. Thank you so much for listening. Till then, stay safe and so long, everyone.
No! No!
We are the Eternals!